Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Round number two has begun in the NBA postseason. Last night, game two in Denver, the Minnesota Timberwolves making statement after statement. Game number one of the second round in the Eastern Conference inside Madison Square Garden. The Knicks win. Don't look at the final 60 seconds and just stare at the final score. So, DRS, as we welcome everybody here to hour number two of this Tuesday on the early line on the Sports Grid Network, we take a big picture approach. We showed where the market has moved in terms of the NBA title odds. Well, how about some individuals here? We'll hear from our coach, JY, get the scouting report later on in this second hour. A little PGA Tour talk this week as well, coming your way up next. But we start by looking at a new market available, the NBA Finals MVP odds, where Jason Tatum is the short favorite at plus 160. His Boston Celtics enter round number two tonight at home in Beantown against the Cleveland Cavaliers. The C's booked as an 11.5-point favorite, and his Celtics an even money plus 100 favorite to win the NBA title, which is why Jason Tatum is plus 160 to win the NBA Finals MVP.
And by the way, we talk about UConn winning the championship in college and try to equate and say, well, yeah, Ben, they got three or four guys that might be able to win the MVP or the MOP, as they call it in college basketball. Why don't you just take UConn so you don't have to sweat it out even for the plus price? I don't agree with that in the NBA. You take a look at the Celtics winning a championship. Oh, it's going to be Jason Tatum that's going to be the MVP. You want to talk about Minnesota making a run to the finals and winning it? Oh, definitely. It's going to be Anthony Edwards that wins that MVP at a plus 340 price. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, it's not going to be Chet Holmgren. It's definitely going to be SGA. And if the Knicks somehow make a charge, it's going to be Brunson. I love this market much more, Ben, than actually picking just the winner of who is going to be. Because to me, it's paint by numbers. The Celtics aren't winning an NBA championship because Tatum is scoring 13 points a game in the NBA Finals. Same thing with the rest of these superstar players. I love this market, and I think you're getting a better advantage here price-wise than just picking the team. And I understand there are anomalies here where Jaylen Brown could go absolutely ballistic and overtake Jason Tatum. But typically, it's one of those awards that, yes, it's supposed to be based on the NBA Finals. But we know how this works. Best player on the best team, that wins it. As long as it's somewhat close, it goes to the superstar player.
Absolutely so. And I think what Donnie just said right there is very sound. These are narrative awards. You can quantify the odds led by X superstar for insert X team, and that's why there's a 60-cent disparity in Tatum's price for the Celtics to win a championship at plus 100 and his own number to win finals MVP at plus 160. There's less than a dollar gap between the Timberwolves winning the NBA championship and Anthony Edwards winning the NBA Finals MVP award. When it came to the MOP for the Final Four for UConn, there were so many players that you could make an argument for, and Tristan Newton ended up winning it. Maybe not their best player and the big man in Donovan Clingan, despite being in that national title matchup against Zach Edey. A different sample size for Connecticut than for Boston, despite the fact we have made the comparisons that the Celtics' price is so short, deservedly so, probably going to win or at least play in the NBA Finals, and yet it's not worth the bet at that current price. at this current juncture. It's a little bit different, though, when you look at the NBA Finals MVP market. And I will say, DRS, maybe it's because of Boston, and we presume them to get there as a minus 330 favorite to win the Eastern Conference. But you do see a couple of other Celtics in this top 10. Jaylen Brown, 12-1. Kristaps Porzingis, his injury timeline, a little bit up in the air, but still 25-1. 37-1, the number on Derek White. Four of the top 10 hail from the Celtics. And we did have a conversation on this network with our guy, Kevin Walsh, about is the MOP Final Four based or the entirety of the NCAA tournament? Please note, this is the finals MVP, only that best of seven series, not the Derek White game where he made eight threes against Miami in round number one.
Exactly, and that's why you take a look and say, well, wait a second, Kristaps Porzingis, 25-1, it should be 125-1 because he might even miss this series overall. You have to remind yourself, it is in just an MVP award for those games that you play in the finals, whether it be four games, five, six, or seven. That's what it's supposed to be graded on. But we also know how the human mind works at this point and says, boy, they wouldn't even have been here in this round unless this guy made six triples in game number six of the previous rounds, right? So it always gets back to who's the best player, which again, the price points here are letting you know they're much better than just picking the team. Now, there is something to be said for, hey, man, don't overcomplicate it. Lay your money on the Boston Celtics. There's a lot of really good players. Somebody might be able to steal that MVP. And yes, you will feel bad when the Celtics win right. The finals in a 4-0 series sweep and you pick Tatum at plus 160 and then it winds up being Jaylen Brown for the MVP and you missed it because you made no money because you tried to get cute. But this market, I do think there is the decided edge where I don't really look forward to seeing as a battle because in order for these teams to win, the best players typically right. Have to play the absolute best. Like, hey, Anthony Edwards, they won the NBA championship in the finals. Well, he averaged 7.8 points per game. They ain't winning the NBA finals if he does that. So we're trying to have these correlations that are a little bit far-fetched, but you get the point out here. These players play well. Their teams will win. They will be MVP. Because honestly, if Rudy Gobert has similar stats to Anthony Edwards, Edwards is getting it. We all know the NBA needs sure. Edwards to get this, not Rudy Gobert.
It is a narrative award, and at the end of the day, media members alike are going to vote for the superstar that is Anthony Edwards. Maybe what he did prior in the playoffs could influence their thinking, but it's going to be Anthony Edwards. So if you think Minnesota's going to win the title, bet Ant at plus 340 to win the NBA Finals MVP as well. To Donnie's point, maybe there is perceived more depth, talent, balance for Boston. Guys we have come to know, like Jaylen Brown being the second part of the duo of the Jays or Kristaps Porzingis. But more than likely, despite what the odds say, and the Celtics an even money favorite at this moment to win the NBA championship and minus 330 to win the East, they're not going to win that Larry O'Brien trophy if Jason Tatum averages 12 points per game in the NBA Finals. He is going to have to go off to secure that 18th NBA championship for Boston, or maybe number 19, whatever the number is at this moment. I think the last non-superstar that really won the NBA Finals MVP, you go back to Andre Iguodala in 2014-15, the 2015 Finals for Golden State. That's probably the last one. You look at the recent list of winners, it's the best player for that eventual best team that is left standing. But it is worth noting, DRS, four of the best prices right now to win the NBA Finals MVP award, all young guys. Jason Tatum, despite being in the league for a while, 26 years old. The Ant-Man is 22. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 25. Luka Doncic, only 25 as well. A lot of young superstars in this next era in the association.
Yes, the NBA seems like they're in some good hands with these younger players. Let me just go back to Andre Iguodala, formerly of Sixers fame, who was infamous for when Allen Iverson came back to the Sixers. He didn't want Allen Iverson to be announced last in the starting lineup because it was his team. Shout out Iguodala. Now, he goes to Golden State, and he got an MVP, Ben. Let's play this out. He was MVP because the other team left him wide open on every play because he's a terrible shooter and made some of his jump shots. And also, LeBron James averaged like 40, 10, and 10 in that series. And Iguodala fouled him every single time down the court and somehow walked away with MVP. Maybe the worst MVP, finals MVP, we've ever seen in the history of the NBA, Andre Iguodala.
But what can we learn from it that even if a player of the caliber and superstardom of LeBron James plays for the losing team, you need to take somebody from the winning team to win that NBA Finals MVP award. Also, you saw Jalen Brunson at 10-1. If the Knicks are into the finals, it's because of Jalen Brunson.
Correct.
That's also worth your 10-1 number if you think the Knickerbockers can reach that stage. So the PGA Tour, the week before another major championship at the Wells Fargo, up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A big two-week stretch on the PGA Tour in the world of golf. A signature event this week in Charlotte at the Wells Fargo Championship. Next week, second major of the year, the PGA Championship. To get you set for it all, Keith Stewart joins us live right here on this Tuesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. Keith, live in Charlotte. Thank you for joining us today on this Tuesday.
Guys, it's a beautiful day down here at Quail Hollow, 85, partly sunny. I can't wait to get into this field. And the top 69 are here for our next sixth signature event of the 2024 season. Let's go.
The top 69, but not a full 70 because of the birth of the first child for Scotty and Meredith Scheffler, as we have been hearing about for quite some time. It happens this week at Quail Hollow. He will miss this signature event at the Wells Fargo Championship. What that means for the rest of the field in just a moment. But last week, Keith, you were here on the early line before the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson down in Dallas, and Taylor Pendrith at 100-1 wins his first PGA Tour victory. How did Pendrith get it done last week at the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson?
You know, Taylor Pendrith was one of those Canadians that I had been targeting all fall. Through the fall and the winter months, he had five top 15 finishes. He'd been playing great golf. And I knew that as a Canadian, he'd want to get on that Mike Weir President's Cup team. Then all of a sudden, a shoulder injury kicks in and he misses a couple cuts early this spring. But he goes to Corrales, finishes T11. He goes to Zurich, finishes 11 with his countryman, Corey Connors. I feel like he's in a good place. A bomber, a birdie maker at 100-1. He made it on my card late. C2C on with Pharrell Coast to Coast on Wednesday. Carver and I talked about him, and we threw him out there. And I said, you know what? I believe these Canadians really want to get on this President's Cup team. This guy is going to come back, and he's going to show some form. And sure enough, Ben Coles gave us a bogey gift on the last hole. And I mean, guys, you just never touch the money until it's over. And of course, Taylor Pendrith gets the job done, 100-1. Third week in a row at Read the Line, the Nelly Scotty parlay a couple weeks ago, last week Hannah Green in L.A., and this week Taylor Pendrith. We are running scorching hot right now.
That's the way we like to do it here, the Wells Fargo Championship this week. And also, you don't have to know it's a signature event just by looking at it. Just look at the purse, $9.5 million last week, $20 million this week. Now, Keith, tell us a little bit about Quail Hollow. Plays about 7,500 yards. What can we expect this week from that golf course?
Well, we've seen Quail Hollow a couple times in some major championships. Recently, there was a President's Cup. But every year, they host the Wells Fargo Championship down here in Charlotte. And this place is a masterpiece. It is a championship venue to the nth degree. I mean, I think if we think 1 to 10, Augusta National being a 10, this is a 9. It's a big boys golf course. The three things you got to key on this week when you're building out your betting card, the first one has to be driver distance. The average driver distance here is 301 yards. The tour average is 284. It's a bomber's paradise. The second thing is you got to putt. The last 10 winners here, they've gained over 6 strokes versus the field on these really elaborate green complexes. And the third thing is that over 50% of your approach shots are going to come from 175 yards or greater. You got to be a good long iron player. Those are my three keys as I build out my betting card.
So as we said, the hottest golfer on planet Earth, Scotty Scheffler, not in the field this week at the Wells Fargo because of the birth of his first child. So how does that affect your betting approach, Keith, as you look at the odds for the Wells Fargo Championship?
Well, we don't have to do any funny games this week, Ben. I mean, without Scotty in the field at, you know, probably plus 250 coming off another win the last time we saw him. We could actually play this one straight up. And we have Rory as the favorite right there around plus 800 at 8-1. And he comes off the win with Shane Lowry at the Zurich, so he's feeling good. And we're heading into a major championship. You know, this golf course, Quail Hollow Club, is a perfect setup for Valhalla next week. So these guys in the signature event are really going to be setting up their games to bomb away, to putt, make a bunch of birdies, and show that they are capable of getting ready for a major championship. Now, no Scotty is one thing, but as of yesterday, we also lost the kid. Ludwig Aubert had to withdraw because of some knee soreness. Now, he was the second favorite in the field, and with good reason. I mean, he's a great long iron player, great driver of the golf ball. So with him removed, now the top of this board with Xander, Wyndham, Patrick, you know, this thing gets way more wide open, Ben, and it's more like last week where we could start to pick winners. We don't have to worry about Scotty at all.
By the way, Keith, I actually like where they're placing some of these signature events at. Not actually the golf course itself, but the time on the map. It used to be a week before a major championship. A lot of the best golfers would take that week off, rebuild their legs, work on their game for the specific golf course that they're going to work on. And also, as we saw, the week after the Masters used to be basically a week off when you head up to Hilton Head. They make that a signature event. Now we're getting the best golfers out there more and more in some events that we normally don't see.
Well, you know what, Donnie? This is a good point, though. I much more enjoy the signature leading into the major than I do after.
Yeah.
You know, the vibe, and part of it was Hilton Head, you know, but the vibe down there was very low country, very much, oh, man, big, deep breath after a very difficult Masters with the wind and Scotty and everything else. This right now, there's a lot of anticipation. There's 69 guys on the property that are, like, fully locked in for the next 2 weeks, and you watch them, and you see their preparation, and you really get a good idea of how we're going to pick a bunch of winners and throughout our entire diversified card for the next 2 weeks. It gets me super excited about coming on with you guys and talking about our early leans.
So Keith, let's stay hot. Give us a winner this week at the Wells Fargo Championship.
Well, they say that you can't defend here at the Wells Fargo Championship, but you know what? Scotty did it at the Players, and I think Wyndham Clark does it here. He was 19 under last year. He won by three. He was ranked 80th in the world. Now he's third in the world. Are you kidding me? I mean, the guy's a better player now. He's won a signature event and a U.S. Open since then. I think he still has the skill set, and he's a better player to get it done. And the guy that I also love, kind of in that middle tier, is Sahith Theegala. He's sitting right at plus 3,000. Sahith is so much better of a ball striker now, and you complement that with the putter, which I said is already a huge key here. In five signature events this year, Sahith has a second, and a sixth. He was also top 10 at the Players. So keep an eye on him, because short game and breakthrough winners here, Rory, Ricky, Wyndham, of course, Max, all those guys, it's happened here, and I think Sahith has a great chance to do it again.
Keith Stewart, we appreciate the time. Enjoy this week at Quail Hollow. To the NFL, we go next, live right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Some NFL news and notes live right here on this Tuesday on the Early Line. Sure, it's early May, but we always talk some football when there is a reason to. And yesterday in Cincinnati, perhaps a reason. The Bengals getting in some off-season team workouts together. And inside the practice facility, Joe Burrow back on the practice field, getting a workout in for Cincinnati. The Bengals team account tweeting, it's happening. Ian Rappaport from NFL Network sharing out, Joe Burrow is back on the field. A good sign. Of course, an injury shortened 2023 NFL season for Joe Burrow, the wrist injury that led to surgery that ended his campaign early in 2023. Now, Donnie, he's back on the field hoping for brighter pastures in 2024.
And we'll see, because we might have a lot of changing parts on this team, which already saw Joe Mixon no longer be their starting running back. He got unhappy wide receivers across the board and a quarterback coming back off of an injury. So a lot more question marks. And also, from a Bengals perspective, you are playing in one of the toughest, if not the toughest divisions in football, where you can't afford to have a misstep here with players and or injuries throughout your season. So, yes, it is good that one of the better quarterbacks is back and looks healthy for the season. But this is nothing short of what we always see see for the Bengals. Joe Burrow coming back off some sort of injury here, ruining some of his offseason. So hopefully this year he can stay healthy. But as I said, being healthy is one thing. Hopefully those players around him are healthy and happy as well. And I don't think that's going to be the case.
4 years for Joe Burrow in his National Football League career. His rookie year, he plays 10 games. Then he comes back, he played 16 in each 2021 and 2022, leading Cincinnati at least to the AFC Championship. Of course, Super Bowl 56 in the appearance out in L.A. during the 2021 NFL season. Last year, an uncharacteristically, or maybe it's not even uncharacteristic at this point, a slow start for Cincinnati in only 10 games. For the Bengals, they have gotten off to very slow starts each of the past 2 years, only to rally to find their footing. Of course, that came up short a season ago with the wrist injury to Joe Burrow. So there's the Joe Burrow component of it all. Health obviously being a factor at the quarterback position for the most significant player on a football field, for the league's richest player on a football field. Of course, that huge contract extension for Joey B before the 2023 NFL season fully got underway. But Donnie's right. This offseason in Cincinnati has not been a smooth ride. Franchise tag on T. Higgins. He demands the trade. Right before the NFL draft 2 weeks ago, Trey Hendrickson, their outstanding edge rusher, also demands a trade. This Bengals team is going to look different than what we have seen in years past. So will you be as optimistic in your evaluation of Cincy Donnie entering 2024?
Here's how I start to get optimistic on them. Pay Jamar Chase and pay Higgins this time going around. Don't wait. Make them happy. Keep them involved. Because here's what's going to happen. Those two wide receivers are eligible for extensions right now. We're not even to training camp yet, and you've already seen multiple wide receivers ring that cash register left and right. Yep. You know what's going to hurt then when you see Jamar Chase and T. Higgins? When Justin Jefferson probably gets that deal before he shows up to training camp. So we're going to expect to play, right, with Chase and also Higgins, who are unhappy knowing they should have an extra $80 to $90 million in their bank account that they don't have. But that's what the Cincinnati Bengals do. They play it on the cheap multiple times. It's going to hurt them this year. So my vibes for the Cincinnati Bengals as it sits right here on May 7th, not high at all, because you need to have your best players being happy in order to perform, and they will do that, but force them out on the football field where they know they left money on the table here and they don't want to be in Cincinnati. Watch out, because that means, oh, look at this. Week 3, my hammy's a little bit sore. I might be able to go out there and tough it out. You know what? That's 6 weeks off, baby. Pay me, and at the end of the year, I'm out of here anyway.
You see the odds right there, tied for the third best price for Cincy to win the AFC title, and that anticipation is around Joe Burrow. 13-1 for the Bengals to win Super Bowl 59, a 10-1 price on Joe Burrow to win the NFL MVP. That direct correlation we discussed with the NBA Finals MVP market. If Joe Burrow is healthy, will the Bengals be playing in an AFC championship game?
Joe Burrow, no, he's not going to be playing there, because I don't think it's going to be a great year for the Bengals just based on what I just laid out. You need to have those vibes going into the season good and hitting all the way around in that tough division, and I don't think the vibes are going to be high, which includes, I don't even know if T. Higgins is going to be their game number one. If he is on the roster, he'll probably be so bent out of shape.
We are going to go back to the NBA with our coach James Young up next, live right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Now this is going to be fun. A recap of the doubleheader on a Monday night, round number 2 of the NBA playoffs, before two more games to start off, two more second round series on this Tuesday night. Our coach James Young, JY, up and in on this Tuesday morning. JY, thank you very much for joining us here. Your New York Knicks, a victory in game number 1. Albeit a controversial final 50 seconds. We'll get your reaction to that in just a moment, but I imagine you woke up still feeling pretty happy on this Tuesday morning.
Ben, I can't take this much longer. Like, between
Maybe not.
You know, the bourbon, the heart medicine, the Pepto-Bismol, the bucket, the trash can. I can't take this. And that's just the last 3 minutes of the game. Forget the previous 45 minutes. The Knicks continue to put their fans and myself through a complete roller coaster almost every game in the playoffs.
Listen, this is the story for the New York Knicks. All seven games decided by 11 points or fewer. Six of the seven, 7 points or less. 4 points. That was the difference last night. 121-117. The New York Knicks win game number one, but the Indiana Pacers do cover as a 5.5-point underdog inside Madison Square Garden. JY, you said the pace would be up. It certainly was. Game one goes over 217.5. Obi Toppin against his former team in East Bay through the legs windmill inside MSG. That was crazy. But JY, what was crazier? The officiating in the final minute of regulation. We had the Aaron Naismith incorrectly called kick ball, as was released in the two-minute report. We had the very controversial Miles Turner illegal screen, where Dante DiVincenzo deserves a Tony for that acting job on Broadway. What did you make of the final minute and its result that allows New York to win game number one?
Well, obviously, the officiating is going to be talked about. And let's be honest, out of the two calls, the Naismith one was the one that was just completely botched. When you get into a fact of the Miles Turner illegal screen, like letter of the law, you're supposed to give the guy a step. So letter of the law, is it a legal screen? Yes. The problem is, folks, that it's so inconsistent. I said this on his network. I compare setting screens to pass blocking in the NFL. You can call it every single time it's illegal. But the problem is that if something is legal for 47 minutes, then it's got to be legal the last minute. And I think that's the problem that the Indiana Pacers have, is the fact that that call was made and you want it to be decided. And it was a great acting job by Dante DiVincenzo. And a scary one at that, because if he does not get that call, Miles Turner, who could shoot the three really well, had a wide open three in the slot with OG Anunoby worried about Siakam in the corner. So the Knicks got away with one, absolutely. But you have to start to also look at, this is the problem I had with Indiana, folks, the ability to get stops. And when a game got tight, the Knicks made enough plays and got scoring, and literally they jumped on Jalen Brunson's back. But one part of the game that's not going to be talked about is there was a stretch with about 3:30 left to go. You had a steal by Anunoby, which led to a three, I do believe. Then another steal by Anunoby, which led to a dunk. And then a really good contest on Siakam. The game was starting to turn Indiana's way, and OG brought it back to New York by getting three critical defensive plays in a row.
By the way, it was a touching moment also after the game at the Garden when referee Zach Zerba traded his jersey to Dante DiVincenzo for a photo op last night. How impressive, JY, was that across the board? But if we look at point guards here in this series, we've only been through one game. You take a look at Brunson, 14 of 26, 43 points. And then you take a look at Tyrese Halliburton, 6 points. You can't. Look, if you get 40-plus points off the bench, you're supposed to win here. But you can't get 6 points out of Halliburton and expect to take down the New York Knicks, your coach.
Well, I think it's a difference of philosophy, Donnie. Let's be honest. Number one, when you look at Indiana, I don't know who they have that could stop him one-on-one, right? So you have to have your Rick Carlisle. You have to do now. You got to pick your poison. Are you going to let Brunson go off? Or are you going to make him give the ball up? The problem with Indiana was they let both happen, right? They let him go off. They let DiVincenzo go off in the second half. I think he shot 8 of 10 from the floor. They let Josh Hart get busy. They let Hartenstein get, I think he had 13 or 15 points. They let them all get busy. On the other side, I thought what wasn't talked about to me was the defensive play of Dante DiVincenzo on Tyrese Halliburton. Listen, folks. Halliburton does not look right. He does not look right since he's been injured since midway during the year. But this was also, folks, the way he started last season, last series, only 7 shots in game 1 against Milwaukee. I wonder if Halliburton was in a feeling out process. If you're Indiana, he's got to be far, far more aggressive in game number 2.
Should they start T.J. McConnell, who had 20-plus in the closeout game number 6 win over Milwaukee and 18 points to lead bench scorers last night in that basketball game? I kid, Tyrese Halliburton should be the guy to get the start, but McConnell has been sensational for Indiana in that reserve role. To J.Y.'s point, before we got to some of the officiating calls, the Aaron Nesmith one, unreviewable. The one on Miles Turner was reviewed and upheld. Part of the issue, JY, the 43-point performance from Jalen Brunson and those great defensive plays by OG Anunoby and another sensational game, Mr. Do-It-All Josh Hart, it will be overshadowed by the controversial calls late in that final minute. Regardless of which way you slice it, the New York Knicks continue to play games that are going to be tight and stressful here in the postseason. Again, 6 of the 7 decided by 7 points or less. It's a 5-point spread for game number 2 tomorrow night inside Madison Square Garden. The New York Knicks, a 1-0 series lead and greater than a $4 favorite to win this series outright. JY, previewing the series yesterday, you said you had some concerns and that Indiana presented some challenges for the New York Knicks. Is what we saw in game number 1 tight throughout the entirety of the 48 minutes going to be the story the rest of the series?
Yeah, they're going to play with pace. They got to, Ben. They got to get this game up and down and make Tibbs go to that bench. And I think that's the big thing that's coming out of this area is you got to find a way to get Precious more time. You got to find a way to get Mitchell Robinson, who doesn't look right, more time. You have to find a way to get Deuce McBride more time because you're not going to be able to sustain your, you know, 4 or 5 starters, folks, playing 20 minutes or more in the second half, including Hart and DiVincenzo not coming out. It's not sustainable. At least you would think so. But, you know, Tibbs comes from that Jeff Van Gundy, Pat Riley tree, which is you are in great physical condition. And Tibbs talked about the fact of Josh Hart playing for Team USA being in such great shape. I want to say one thing first, real quick. You mentioned McConnell. Now, you don't pull a Halliburton, but I would be curious to see McConnell with Halliburton in the backcourt together, Nesmith as the 3, because Nembhard is too small to guard someone like Brunson. Maybe have Nesmith guard Brunson a little bit in front of Nembhard, who's too small, and let McConnell be a little bit of a distributor and maybe put Halliburton off the ball bench so he can have more opportunities to score. They got to find a way to unlock Tyrese Halliburton because when he's going downhill and he's scoring, his assists become even more dangerous because he gets more guys involved.
If you're looking at Indiana, maybe you're saying, hey, Tyrese Halliburton, our all-star, scored only 6 points and we lost by just 4. Mm-hmm. There could be some optimism for game number 2. That's tomorrow night. Game number 2 in the Western Conference Series between the Nuggets and the Timberwolves. That was last night. JY joins us for a second consecutive segment. Is the series already over as the Timberwolves steal 2 on the road at Altitude? Find out next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on this Tuesday, looking back on a Monday night doubleheader in the NBA playoffs. And in game number 2 at Altitude, a must-win kitchen sink type game for Denver. Minnesota said, all right, here's the kitchen sink. 106-80. The Timberwolves win by 26 to win both games to start this series in Denver, 26 points, up by 30-plus at points last night as well. JY, how have the Timberwolves been this dominant in Denver?
Their defense travels. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, when you have a young team and it's about defense and it's concerning, can your team take it to another level? And this Minnesota team have guys that put you in jail. I mean, Jamal Murray looked like Allen Iverson against the Lakers, and now he looks like Chris Childs against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I mean, what this team is doing defensively is amazing. And guys, you know, take away Mike Conley, right, the veteran. These are young guys, man. These aren't like grizzled veterans, 10, 15 years that have been through playoff war after playoff war. These guys have taken it to another level defensively. And literally, you're looking around and you're like, who on Denver is going to make a shot and who's going to create one? So to me, the defensive play and just coming out and locking up Jamal Murray, holding him to 3 of 18 from the floor. I haven't seen Jamal. I know he's banged up with the calf. He has not looked as bad ever in the playoffs. Damn. And he's looked bad in back-to-back cases. I know he played well in the second half of game number one, but what they did defensively was really amazing, Ben.
I'll tell you, just being stunned at the final outcome, 26 points on the road in a must-win game number two for Denver on their home court, and they only score 80 points. And also you say, well, yeah, probably Rudy Gobert was unbelievably tremendous on defense. Coach, he didn't even play last night, and yet you see that first half where Minnesota was the clear side and absolutely took it to the Denver Nuggets. I look back on that regular season where Karl-Anthony Towns basically missed a month and said, okay, we're going to learn to play without one of our better players. Rudy Gobert's down yesterday. They didn't skip a beat. Everything has been going right for the Timberwolves. And the joke's going to be, Coach, what happens if you have a four-game sweep to start your playoff run against the Suns? If you have a four-game sweep against the Denver Nuggets, which right now, as Ben pointed out earlier in the show, is the favorite at the FanDuel Sportsbook for a sweep in this series. Unbelievable what the Timberwolves are doing here, Coach.
It really is. And it's Chris Finch standing up, sitting down. I don't think it matters. What he's done has been absolutely fantastic defensively. But the thing that I thought was really, really smart of him is putting Kyle Anderson into the starting lineup. And Kyle Anderson is just, I've talked about it. I don't know. Listen, Donnie, it could be my Jersey bias. It could be my Bob Hurley bias. But these Jersey kids, they just know how to ball. And they play the right way. But Kyle Anderson going into the starting lineup, just a Swiss Army knife. One of the more underrated free agent signings because he's a guy that just does what you need to do. He's kind of like a chameleon. So great job by Kyle Anderson. Nasri does the stuff off the bench. Alexander Walker, like, I'm looking at this. I'm like, all right, this, you know, I thought Minnesota may win the series after game one. But I'm looking at this now saying, like, are we going to even get a series now? Because all of a sudden we got this blowout victory, and there you look at Denver like, I don't know where, if you are Mike Malone, you go to and say, hey, we got this to hang our hat on for game number three. They literally have nothing.
JY, the odds makers kind of thinks this series is over. Again, Minnesota in four is plus 100. It's even money at this moment. If that is not going to be the case, what is the adjustment that Denver makes before game number three on Friday? I guess good news is they have many days off to figure things out before they head to Minneapolis.
Well, one, they're going to have to find a way to get, I think, Jamal Murray on the move and get him scoring. That's if Jamal Murray even plays on Friday night, depending on his little throwing the frisbee or whatever he threw on the floor last night. By the way, I'm 47 years old. Those heat pads, they still use those things? Like, I don't even know they use those things anymore. Those are like from when I play. Ben, you may not have dealt with those heat pads. Donnie and I, we're a little bit more mature than you are, a little bit older than you are. So yeah. We have to deal with this.
Sure, the heat pads were a feature of Samford and Son each and every night. Good stuff.
Yep, true.
But when you look at it, guys, you know, you got to get Jamal Murray going. And for me, you have to find a way to get some kind of bench production. I talked about it. I thought Reggie Jackson could have did it. Reggie, not doing a good job. 1 of 6. Justin Holiday gave him some minutes here. But to me, it's just you got to find a way to get off to better starts, and you got to get Jamal Murray locked in, and you got to get some kind of bench production so that when you go to your bench, you're not losing it. You can at least keep it minimum even, if not gain some kind of advantage.
Two things we know for sure here, Coach, is maybe how long this series might go for, or even how long this segment might actually go for. But let's take a look at the NBA Western Conference odds to win here. We're taking a look at some big movement now. The T-Wolves, a minus 115 price now. OKC, the top seed in the West, plus 280. You see the Mavericks at 420, and everybody leaving those Denver Nuggets left for dead at 7-1. Are we agreeing with these price points, or, Coach, do you look at the Denver Nuggets and say, whoa, just a week ago, they were that minus 115 or so price. Now we're looking at them at a 7-1 price. Any chances the Nuggets can actually come back and make this a series and let alone win this series?
I don't think they can come back and win this series. If you are lucky here, I think you could look at maybe six games. You split the games in Minnesota and then you know, don't get lose on your home court in game five and it goes back to Minnesota for a game six closeout. But I think the odds are right here. I do think the Oklahoma City Thunder and Dallas series is going to be a little bit closer than people think. I think this is going to six or seven games. So I think that could be a little bit of a tighter spread between those two. But when you got those two guys, those two monsters and Towns and Ant Edwards, it's just really hard to beat a team like that, especially if they could turn around defensively and do what they did. Folks, they won by 20-something points, and their best defender wasn't even there. Like, that's the scary part about it is, let's see what happens in Minnesota. They will be fired up come game three Friday night.
54 combined points for Ant and Cat, not an animal show, but the leaders of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And they held the Nuggets to less than 35% from the field without Rudy Gobert. Friday's game three, a far way away, a doubleheader of game number one, a preview next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We haven't even started game number one of the second round series in Boston between the Celtics and the Cavaliers, and the odds makers already think it is finished. A 12-point spread tonight inside TD Garden in favor of Boston against the Cavs, who won game number seven on their home floor on Sunday afternoon to move past the Magic and advance to the second round set. 12 points, JY. A 12-point spread for a conference semifinal series playoff opening game. Total on its way up to 10. When you look at this 12-point number tonight, will game number one in Boston be more competitive than that spread indicates?
I don't think so. And the amazing thing is I do think that 2 to 3 games, I think Cleveland did cover the spread against Boston, including that one wild game that I think that Boston was up huge in the fourth quarter, third quarter, and they lost it, I think, in a 105-104 game. So, yeah, even though Cleveland's done well against the spread, I look at the way Cleveland went into the playoff scenario of trying to get themselves the 4 seed to play Orlando to just get out of the first round. So they're really happy. And here comes Boston, a team that usually in the first game just tries to throw the hardest haymaking knockout punch right away to try and tell you that this series is going to be a wrap. Now, listen, do I think Donovan Mitchell can steal a game in this series? Probably. But is it going to be game one? Absolutely not. I compare it to what happened in game number one against Miami. I think Boston comes out and they absolutely crushes Cleveland. You got to remember, folks, Cleveland only had a one-day prep for this. So they basically won on Sunday, one-day practice, turnaround play on Tuesday. That's not a good sign for a Boston team that's probably been waiting, knowing that they're prepping for both teams as they get ready for the second round. I like Boston minus the 12 points. I would be willing to go even alt line. I think I saw it late last night. I don't know what it was today. A 14.5 at about plus 130. I think they win by 15 plus. I think they win going away game number one.
Coach, talk to me a little bit about this series, too, because the final three games of the previous series for Cleveland against Orlando, Jared Allen missed those three games. He averages close to 17-11 on the season. Banged up ribs. He's questionable for the game tonight. Could he have an advantage in this series? Let's just say Porzingis doesn't come back earlier than later, and could the Cavaliers maybe make a game of these first couple games if they can steal some of these Porzingis minutes away?
Well, they're going to need Jared Allen to make this any kind of a competitive series. Let's be honest, Donnie, because of the fact of his ability to rebound and really be aggressive. And what it also does is allow Evan Mobley to turn around and play the 4 spot. So I think they kind of naturally go together defensively. And I think, listen, I'm not convinced of Evan Mobley guarding anyone as a 5 because I just think he doesn't have the muscle and the defensive tenacity inside to really bang with people. So they really need Jared Allen here to come back. If Jared Allen doesn't come back than in a series at all, then it's definitely going to be a sweep. They need him as that inside presence, someone that could score around the rim and post some kind of fear. So as he rolls to the basket, you got to worry about them. And then that could open up shots for Strus, LeVert, Garland, some of these shooters for Cleveland.
The Celtics a minus 3,500 favorite on the series outright price to beat Cleveland in advance of the Eastern Conference Finals, where currently the Celtics are a minus 300 odds-on favorite to win the Eastern Conference crown. We expect much more competition in the other second-round series that begins tonight in Oklahoma City. The Thunder a 3.5-point favorite against the Dallas Mavericks. If you expect a blowout, JY, in Boston, how tightly contested is game number one in OKC?
Razor sharp, and it's going to be really interesting because of the way that OKC has stepped up their defense, particularly in its first round, only giving up 95 or fewer points to the Pelicans. And it'll be interesting to see defensively how these guys line up. Who guards Luka? Who guards Kyrie? Who guards SGA on the other side? Is it Jones that guards? Does PJ Washington guard a little bit of Luka because of his length? And it's going to be really intriguing series. I think losing Maxi Kleber is going to hurt them, obviously. I would look at Derek Lively in regards to rebounding because I think the fact that that's where you can kind of get OKC on the board. But I think OKC is the better team. I do like the minus of points, but I may let this game play out a little bit early, maybe just take them on the money line because I think it's going to be a really tight game one.
The odds makers listening to Donnie Wrightside. He went on his diatribe yesterday and said how disrespectful the minus 120 series outright price was to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now OKC minus 130. You did it, Donnie. You did it. JY, thank you for the scouting report here on this Tuesday morning. A doubleheader of NBA playoff action tonight. Hit the fadeaway to the break, or maybe the fadeaway to hour number three, which starts after the break, live right here on the Spiz Grizz.